Hey, everybody, it's Todd. We got a new sponsor today, and I wanted to take a moment to thank them, first of all, for sponsoring. That's so meaningful to me. And secondly, to tell you, I think you're really going to like this sponsor. They're remarkable. It's a very cool organization, to be sure. This sponsor is called ORC HSE Strategies. And they're an industry leader in developing innovative and sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. And the way they do their work is remarkable. They collectively get together with probably, they have real numbers for this, but like 120 of the largest companies in the world. And they're not limited just to large companies, but they get these groups together with pretty regular basis, and they sort of leverage their ability to learn from each other. It's brilliant if you think about the new view of safety, and they've been doing it for many, many, many years. They're pretty elite. They're pretty fast moving and pretty smart, but it's kind of cool that they're very interested in the podcast. If you want to get a chance, there's going to be lots of times to talk about them for the next 6 months or so, but I think you're going to find them to be super, super, super interesting. They build communication networks, and they do it by leveraging themselves. And they're led by a remarkable group of experts. If you're interested in knowing more, give them a call or drop them an email and thank them for sponsoring the podcast. You can contact ORCHSE, and the contact is named Linda Haney. And her phone number is 202-510-0509. Or you can write her, our buddy Linda Haney, at linda.haney. That's linda.haney, L-I-N-D-A. .haney at orchse.com. Send them some love, will you? Brand new sponsor, and I'm glad to have them. ORCHSE Strategies. Now, let's listen to the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin. How are you today? You know how we always talk about learning as the secret weapon? The one advantage you have against accident prevention, accident response, is your ability to learn from successful work and build your case there. Learning seems to be the key. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, a bunch. But we're going to do it by talking about learning across cultures. So I'm fixated on how the new view translates into other cultures, high-context cultures, low-context cultures, high-authoritarian cultures, low-authoritarian cultures. And it's interesting to me. And for those of you that have international operations, this isn't the first time you've talked about this or even thought about it. This is a conversation we've been having a lot. Because you can't just take the new view stuff and translate it word for word into another language and say, go, okay, go, here it is, take it, run, fly out, yeah, woo-wee, be successful. It doesn't work that way. In fact, the challenge is to realize that lots of the things that drive safety and safety capacity and reliability capacity in our organizations are really functions of the bigger cultures in which we work. So highly authoritarian cultures, cultures that have a very strong chain of command and high class respect, right? Those cultures aren't going to be very quick to criticize up. They just aren't. And there are other cultures, really, really, really flat cultures, where the conversation is so collective that it's very difficult to ever determine who does what with whom or at any level. That's a big part of what we want to think about, and that's kind of the discussion that we want to have. And that's where this conversation goes today. We're going to talk to Andrea Baker. Now, Andrea is great. She is actually a New View safety person who is actually centered internationally. So she's living internationally. She's from the United States, but she's currently living in Italy. Tough work, I know. And her entire function is to work with and actually present this new view of safety to organizations multiculturally across the way. And that's the conversation we want to have today. So I hope everything's good. The podcast is going great. The numbers are humongo. Thank you for that. Everything's going good here. I just am really interested in getting into this discussion. So sit back and relax. Andrea is an expert She's really nicely qualified to talk about the new view because she does it in an applied way. So I like the voice of sort of an application person talking to us in our discussions, and that's what's going to happen next. So sit back and relax. This is Andrea Baker, and she's going to talk about human performance, the new view, and culture. So here we go.
I think it helps us recenter on the understanding of really what's important in life, and that our relationships with people, right? You take everything else away, and that's the relationships. Because I can tell you, going to a place where I don't speak the language, just the simple fact of being anywhere, being in a bar, going out for dinner, and I realize that I have this isolation from society around me, and you realize how much we really are social creatures. Because that isolation is an added stress. And so you start to even compare that with the ideas of the new view of understanding what it's like to either feel isolated in a system or feel like your opinions don't matter, and how much stress that brings to just everyday life of not feeling like you're part of the social fabric of wherever you are.
Oh, that's a great observation. I mean, I think you're right on target too. And so that's one of the advantages, I think. So what do you think about all that? I mean, you're getting to be kind of – I read your little thing you wrote, like a couple paragraph thing Bob sent to me. It was great. You're getting to be kind of the expert on culture. What are you thinking about all this?
Expert, absolutely not, but
– Well, you know.
Not an expert in anything, but what I can tell you –
I can toss the word expert around freely.
Okay. Well, I'll let you say it. I won't repeat it.
Okay.
Like
yeah.
Company.
Yeah, that's good.
So what I can tell you is that people are much more similar than I would expect them to be in general. I think even though we have amazing cultural differences, and that's what makes everything about travel fascinating, is that people fundamentally are wired the same way and have the same needs. I mean, we all know what our needs are in society, right? We need to make sure we've got shelter and food and relationships with people. And when you think about what the new view's providing, to me, this is just in my humble opinion, it seems like it's almost as needed, as primal as those things. And so independent of, you know, what people do for holidays, what their views are on religion, what their political structure looks like, they all have this same need to feel valued, to not feel like their actions are going to be judged without someone understanding their rationality, local rationality, the context of what they were in. And the more society is sort of separated from that concept, where the rest of your social structure doesn't fundamentally support that concept, when people start hearing about it and seeing it and feeling it, they want it more and more. And they really are passionate about how do we make that culture change to get there. And I think that part surprises me more because I wasn't sure that would be the case, to be honest with you. I was a little bit nervous that it might not resonate everywhere.
Wow. So introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, and that'll be a really good way to sort of kick the podcast off.
Sure. I'm not all that interesting, though. I'm honestly, and maybe that's the most interesting part. I can tell you how I started. So my name's Andrea Baker. I am one of the people that goes and helps train on this subject within the company. But I can tell you, I'm really no one special. I was invited to a presentation, Todd, that you gave. I don't know if you even know this story. But you were
does it end bad? Does it, it's
no, it's got a good ending.
Okay. Oh yeah. Then go ahead.
Yeah. So you were giving a presentation and I honestly almost didn't go. I had heard this term thrown around before, this hop, it wasn't even new view at that point within my, you know, my small, social structure. So I just heard hop before and I wasn't sold on it. I didn't really understand it fully, and I didn't think it was going to add any value. And I only went to the presentation because someone told me that you were entertaining. So I said, I can deal with some entertainment. I'll go see what he has to say. And I have to tell you that presentation actually changed my life. I would say that my trajectory changed dramatically before and after. And there was some other guy with you, this Bob Edwards fellow, that was doing a presentation with you. And I said, this guy works in the company. How is he able to do this? And I asked Bob afterwards, how do I learn about this? How do I learn how to teach this? What do I do? And he said, well, I don't know. I just asked Todd if I could learn from him. So why don't you come do the same thing? So I said, okay, sure. Sign me up. I'd love to. And I just started reading. And Todd, when you were anywhere local, right, I'd come and hang out with you when we could. And
right,
teach
right.
Me. And just read from a lot of smart people and realized that what the New View was offering me was terminology to explain something that I fundamentally had been trying to do on my own and didn't have the words to say. It was giving me a power and a resource to make the changes that I thought we needed, but I couldn't express them correctly. And so that's who I am. I'm really nobody. I'm just somebody that really loved the concepts and now get to go teach it as my job.
Well, first of all, to us that are listening to you, you're more than just nobody. You are somebody special because you're coming through our earbuds right now. Right. So you're in our heads. So whether you want to be or not, that's a good thing. But let's take it one step further, because I think you bring a really interesting vantage point to this because you're doing this internationally. And lots of people that are interested in the New View and human performance and sort of this reliability have really sites all over the world. Tell us about the opportunity to do it internationally and then sort of extrapolate. How's it going internationally? I mean, is it good? Is it bad? Do you have all your slides translated into like Hungarian and Italian and all those kind of things?
Those are all really good questions. So I can tell you the first time I presented internationally, I was in Turkey. And there was a gentleman in my class from Iraq. And before the class started, I'm just walking around talking to people. And he tells me what it's like to have grown up in Iraq. And he said, you know, I grew up with a backpack on one arm and an AK-47 on the other. And at that moment, I had a bit of a panic attack. I really did. I said, I can't relate. And you know, making sure that you make your point in any of these discussions, you have to be able to relate to people. You have to have them be able to see something from a different perspective. And I said, I can't relate. And I started to worry that this was not going to work. And what was fascinating to me is by far that gentleman was more engaged in the conversation than anyone else in the room. Everyone was engaged, but he was intent on learning everything he possibly could from that conversation. He wanted to know books to read. He wanted to know where he could go to learn more information. He wanted tips on how he doesn't blame people in his personal life, right? So he wanted tips on how do I take this philosophy and make sure that I'm using it, not just at work, but I'm using it with my wife, with my kids. And that was amazing to me. And that was the first moment where I realized that we are a lot more similar than we probably give ourselves credit for.
Is it things like storytelling? I mean, because you started with the importance of sort of being able to relate, and I immediately translated that into, well, I've seen you teach. I mean, you're a good storyteller. Is it the stories that create that relationship across culture?
I would definitely say you have to tell stories. There's no way to really present this information to anyone and have them fully understand it unless you present stories. And the stories you pick have to pull on the psychology element of what we do independent of culture, how we're wired, the fact that we're wired for energy conservation, right? And the fact that complacency isn't a choice, and give people real examples of what they may have done in their life. And even if that example isn't something that fits perfectly into their everyday life, they watch 60% of the rest of the room react. And 60% of the rest of the room really understands what that example was about. I think it's really about storytelling, but also allowing people to become part of that story, giving them points in that story where they would have to make a decision.
So how do you do that cross-culturally?
Well, you'd be surprised at the fact that no matter what we talk about, people fundamentally make similar decisions. So something as simple as talking about complacency, right? Talking about whether or not people think it's a choice. If you are in a hierarchical culture, it is really, really hard for me to just tell you that complacency is not a choice. But if I demonstrate it for you, then you believe me and you realize that your culture might be telling you one thing, but how you are as a person and how we are as humans might be something completely separate. So I ask whether or not you've driven and you don't remember getting home and you don't remember driving the last 5 kilometers or the last 5 miles. And as long as the only common theme is that people drive, which honestly, not in every culture, there are, you know, there are people that don't drive very often. As long as there's someone in the room or you as a person have driven, you can fundamentally understand that, yeah, that's true. I have gotten home and realized I don't remember the last 5 kilometers or last 5 miles. And at that point, even though you're cross culture, you've taken an easy element of almost everyone's daily life and explained it to them in a way where they know they didn't actively make a decision to become complacent while they were driving. And that starts to break down the barriers of all the things that they may have been taught in the culture that they grew up in.
And are you finding these new view ideas work in the organizations?
Yeah, I think the really powerful ones, I think you do have to tailor your approach by culture. So, for example, you can use an approach to changing a culture using the learning team process. You can use that in some locations pretty well, where they don't need a specific set of rules or guidelines to follow in order to understand that not only are they solving problems with a team of people, but they're also using it to help change the culture and to demonstrate all of the principles of the new view in the process. You can do that in some locations. In other locations, I found I almost have to give them a laundry list of options of what they could do. What could they physically go back to a site and do in order to demonstrate these principles? One example is something that I've just began calling a black line, blue line comparison, where you take a rigid structure of a meeting that you used to have in which the goal of the meeting was to go over a required procedure. So if you're in the EHS world, you could call it a startup meeting, however you want to describe it. And you take that meeting and you change it just a little bit. You can still go over your black line, still go over your procedure as written. And then you make the simple statement afterwards of, I understand that you cannot follow your procedure as written in all scenarios. Please tell me where those scenarios are so we can go look at them together. And that takes a society that really needs more structure to how they're going to make this culture change and gives them very specific things that they can go back and do that meets the expectations of their leadership, but also helps drive this change in culture in this understanding of complication of procedures and the fact that they're always going to be incomplete. All of these principles we talk about, you can take them and tie them to specific actions that you can do within a site.
Oh, that's a great idea too. I mean, that sort of translates the theory into application, and then that gives them some go-dos, right? You can go and do this. And out of those go-dos, it's not terribly, the opportunity to learn is more significant than the opportunity to actually physically change the procedure or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say a stronger, faster way of moving your culture is not necessarily focusing on those thou must go do this differently. But if you're in a location where that's how people respond and that's the expectation set by their leadership, then being able to translate each of those principles into something you can do differently becomes extremely powerful.
And do you notice, so what are you observing? Because you're in a lot of cultures. I mean, you're dancing between cultures. What are you observing? What are some rules of thumb that we could sort of take away?
I'd say in any culture, independent of whether it's really top down or not top down driven, and I think this is your operating rule, Todd. I don't go to any place to give any talk or discussion unless the senior leadership or the executive of the area is going to sit through the whole training. So that would be the one thing that I think across all cultures became a requirement that I set for myself, because independent of the culture, we understand the amazing influence that leadership has in an organization, right? So independent of whether or not that's a type of organization that is extremely top down and that's also your culture is top down, or whether or not people are a little more autonomous or feel that they have more autonomy, as soon as you have a top line or upper leadership saying things that fundamentally oppose the principles you've just learned, it tends to stifle the culture change. So that's one thing that I would say is completely consistent across all cultures and that I learned to adapt to. As far as differences, the only thing that I can point to is really if you're creating a plan for what you do. So you come in, I do training, and then there has to be something that the people that I've trained can do. And so we originally thought, well, we'll just make a program, a requirement that we have to have everyone do and everyone follow. And we know through even Hot Principles that doesn't function well. And so the plan has to be tailored to the people at the site. And someone will ask, well, how do you do that? How do you know how to tailor it? And my response is, I don't have to. I take the time to come in and teach you the principles. You know what your culture is, and you know where your weaknesses are, and you know what your end goal wants to be. All I need to do is help facilitate that conversation when we're done. I don't have to do anything specific. I don't have to know any details about what it's like to be you. All I need is to ask the right questions so that you tell me what it's like to be you, and you decide what you want to do to move forward.
Well, so let me ask this question, because I think this question, what tips would you give? Like, do you translate your slides into language? What tips would you give, actual tips would you give to people who have to, you know, go down to, I don't know, Guatemala and give a class or something?
So this is the tip, and it's not an easy one. You cannot translate this unless it's your mother tongue. So if you are going to go to a different location and you need to give this training and it needs to have translated slides and you don't speak that language, you shouldn't go. You should find someone to train and help make sure that they understand it, because the languages and the nuance in the discussion is so technical that unless you are extremely, if you're fluent, right, and you're really comfortable in the nuance of the language, then absolutely, by all means. But if you're going to a location where you're not comfortable, either go and speak in whatever language you're comfortable in and make sure that the people in the room are extremely comfortable with that language as well, or take the time and the effort to train someone to really understand as much as you do and as well as you do how to deliver this material, and let them translate the material to make sure that it actually makes sense. There's too many decisions that you would have to make on making sure that your conversation really resonates with people and making sure that your stories resonate, that if you don't have an audience that can understand the language you're comfortable in, it's very difficult to do. So what I can tell you is when I have to go to a place where most people don't speak the language that I'm comfortable with, what I do is I only ask for those that can. And it sometimes is a small number of people. And then I teach them in English. Sometimes we even do a learning team in a different language, in their native language. And I coach them through the learning team, asking them to translate different parts for me because I can watch body language. But then I take the time to take the people that are super passionate about this subject, and I go back home or I travel and I teach them via WebEx all of these principles again. And they do teach backs with me where they teach the material back to me. And then we go over it again and they teach the material back to me. And those are the people that then go pass on this message to those that don't understand English.
I think that's a really valuable tip. Do you find you have to change your slides? You know, from your standard fundamentals class, are you switching them up a lot?
Well, yes, but I think no more so than
in English.
Right. English, right? No, I mean, I think what you taught me, Todd, is that you need to teach to the audience, or you need to teach the people and whatever level they're at. You always have to start from the beginning, and then you either fast forward or you pause in places where you need it. I can't say that I've ever used a standard deck. I start with a standard deck, and then, you know, we take a break every hour and a half, and I go back to the deck and I pull out slides that they don't need to go over. I add ones in. You know, sometimes I'll just add a phrase in that we need to make sure that we have more conversation around. Anything that is a cultural specific discussion. So when we talk about rate of fatalities in car crashes, I make sure to have whatever the local country is, as that metric so that it resonates with them. I also, if I'm actually talking about car comparison, I'll try to use a car that is familiar to them and not just a US-based car. But most of it, other than that, the deck stays the same apart from pausing and, you know, expanding conversation where it needs to be expanded and moving quicker over concepts that they seem to really understand and embrace in wherever I am.
Wow, this is super helpful. This was great. So what's next for you? What are you thinking? What are you reading? What's exciting to you?
Honestly, what's really exciting to me is expanding this concept of restorative justice, even beyond EHS. So looking at how we operate within the internal space of an organization, not necessarily something that touches into the judicial system, because once we get there, right, we end up following a different set of rules. But within the space that we in an organization can control, how do we react when we're talking about something like an integrity violation? So not necessarily a intentional deviation on the EHS side, but an integrity violation that would touch, you know, a number of different subjects. How do we react when that happens? And is that reaction to failure really improving our system, or are we still just playing this blame game?
Wow, that's interesting. So any fears, any increase? I was just in Europe last week, and I noticed there's an increased amount of attention around potential terrorism. You see more security in airports. Have you really noticed that difference?
I would say that I was in Paris a couple days after the terrorist attacks in Paris. And I would say that's the place where I really saw fear. It felt really similar to 9/11 for us, where people weren't outside, right? They actually created a time and a day where people were going to go to cafes to just show the solidarity. I would say, in general, the feeling is similar to how I think I would feel if I was back in the U.S. There's an awareness. There's sort of this feeling of unknown. But I don't know that it's any different from the feeling that we have in the U.S. of the unknown. So.
So what do you think? Isn't she amazing? The fact that she talks about culture, Big C culture, with the comfort and ease that she does in an applied way is entirely a function of the fact that she's out there doing that work. And I'm stunned at what she's learning, and I'm really pleased that she shared it with us. That's the podcast. I hope you listen to this one a couple times. Thanks for listening. As always, you make the podcast go. Subscribe, tell your friends, everybody loves it. Kiss, kiss, hug, hug. Until then, learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you can legally squeeze into your workplace while wearing clothing. That's kind of an important caveat. And for goodness sakes, be safe.